Welcome, everybody, to the NPC's Weekly News Roundup. For the week of November 3rd, 2023, here is what's making headlines. BlizzCon 2023 Opening Day Recap. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 reviews are out, and it's not pretty. Bungie lays off 100 devs, and gamers respond. And Sakurai thinks it'll be difficult to push Smash Brothers further. My name is Travis Sherman, and as always, for the Weekly News Roundup, I am joined by Kyle Immen. Kyle, hello.
Hello, what's up?
Well, it's a rather news-packed day here. A lot of big stuff, especially today. I'm doing pretty good, but you think we should just hop right into it?
Oh, yeah, especially since we've got exciting announcements. I watched the opening day stuff, at least until they cut away to the videos that were basically just reels from the show's announcements. I don't know if you managed to catch any of it.
Yes, I did. So we're talking here, of course, about BlizzCon 2023's opening ceremony. And yes, yeah, I did. I got through one of the World of Warcraft classic announcements, and that was as far as I got before I had to tune out for something else. So yeah, let's hop right in and talk about what's been announced so far. So
yeah,
a lot of the stuff here isn't necessarily in order of what we learned here this morning, but first things first, of course, is that when it opened up, you had Mike Ybarra, the head of Blizzard, come out, of course, and say, hey, this is awesome. We're glad to have everybody together. You know, it's the first time that they've actually had an in-person event since 2019, given, of course, the pandemic. And they had what they had called BlizzCon Line, where they did an online event, but then things kind of took a turn and they decided to step back and didn't have anything. But now, of course, they're having an in-person event. We have Overwatch World Cup going on at the same time as well, too. And that took place before, some of it took place before the opening ceremony this morning. But one of the big things with Mike Ybarra, though, is that he was very, you could tell he was stumbling over a couple of his words in that, but you could actually tell it looked like he had tears in his eyes because of just the energy in the room and everything else going on. He was just, I think, overly excited to be there leading things. So that's a pretty big thing to take away, especially because he didn't come into power as head of Blizzard until the actual pandemic happened.
Right.
Because you still had Mike Morhaime, who was there and then stepped away. But yeah, so this was kind of a big thing for him, at least taking over and leading. And from there, one of the interesting parts, though, besides, of course, the, you know, the tears of joy in his eyes and just, you know, the crowd cheering as well, too, and everything going on there at the start. None other than head of Xbox Phil Spencer decided to appear on stage too. And he basically reiterated a lot of the things that the gamers are really like looking for, of course, is that, you know, they feel like, you know, they're here to be empowered by the gamers. They're here to make sure that they deliver the best content and the best that Blizzard can be. And so, you know, I think that's good, especially because the acquisition only closed a couple weeks ago. And, you know, it's just good for the new big boss to be around to, you know, kind of help settle things down, I guess, you know, or at least help make sure that he has a presence instead of just being like a C-suite style executive hiding away in the boardroom, you know?
Yeah. And I don't know. I felt like his presence was more to give the gamers comfort, but I don't know. It felt like so much more than that. Just his presence and the way he talked about it, like he wanted to make sure that I guess Blizzard wasn't going anywhere for anyone. That Microsoft wasn't just going to take away Blizzard and keep it all to themselves. And it was kind of nice to have the reassurance. But I guess, you know, as people that have followed the whole fiasco, I guess, as it is since the beginning, we kind of knew that. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it was kind of cool to see him there and to hear him, you know, talk about Diablo and whatnot. And I don't know, just, you know, be more of a welcoming part of the Xbox family, I guess.
Yeah, I think that's very true. One funny part, though, I'll make clear here, of course, and you could actually kind of hear some of the concern in the audience voices there at the beginning, is that when they did the opening intro before Mike Ybarra came on stage, there was nothing about StarCraft. There was no mention of it. There was no there was no old cinematic from like StarCraft II or anything like that in the sizzle reel that they had at the beginning. It was Warcraft, it was Diablo, it was Overwatch. That was it, you know? And so a lot of people were there, you know, like, just what the heck's going on? And you had even one person when Mike Ybarra had read off, you know, it's like from Overwatch to Diablo to Warcraft, you know, and he went on about something else and someone in the crowd yelled, "What about StarCraft?" And he just laughed about it a bit, but didn't say anything else. It wasn't until Phil Spencer came on the stage and had said, you know, from the early days with Warcraft to how successful players have been with Diablo and, of course, StarCraft. And, of course, that sent the entire crowd into a frenzy. So that was just funny to see. And I'm hoping maybe we'll hear something about StarCraft through one of the other channels. But needless to say, I wanted to at least make a mention there about that one. But the first thing that they talked about and brought on stage was about Overwatch 2. And talking about, of course, the rich legacy, the rich history that's within Overwatch, the diversity behind everything that they have, that they that's within the world that they've developed. But then they went ahead and announced, which had actually leaked out about several hours before BlizzCon, the next tank character known as Malga. He is a Samoan tank. We actually literally just before recording went and played some Overwatch 2 to give him a try. And it's Maui with chain guns.
Pretty much, yeah.
It's Maui from Moana, yeah.
Yeah.
So he's, but he's, the way I can easily describe him, and Kyle, I think you would agree with this, though, is that he seems like he's a mix of D.Va with the chain guns, except, of course, he has to reload. Reinhardt with the charge ability. Winston with the end of the charge ability where he jumps and he can stun people when he lands. The healing ability itself is a little bit different than he has.
That I feel like healing is almost like a Junker Queen type thing.
Yeah, it kind of feels like that too. But yeah, his healing ability is one that requires the, like, it's an AoE healing ability and it requires the players that are in that AoE to be causing damage to be able to heal. So that means that you, like as a healer, for example, like you were playing Zenyatta at one point there, that if you were taking damage, as long as you're doing damage to another character, you'll actually, to an enemy character, you'll gain health back while in that. And that sphere of influence only lasts, I think, for about 5 seconds. And then, of course, his alt is called Cage Fight, which not only does an infinite ammo buff, but it locks the enemies that are around who get caught by it into a basically an arena of sorts, like a small, like cylindrical arena with, it's basically shield, and they're chained in with some sort of like holographic chains. But I wish I had recorded it, Kyle. I had a bug, though. I was telling you about this at the beginning. I had a bug playing on Dorado. I think it was Dorado. Yeah, it was Dorado. Playing on Dorado, and I had spawned my cage fight, and then an enemy, Malga, spawned their cage fight. And I ended up glitching through the map. Like, literally, it was more like I was rubber banding from where I was at out of the map itself, back in, out in, until the actual ultimate finished up completely. And then I was back right in the middle of everything again. Like, I was completely out of my element as soon as I got back in.
That's just so strange. So, I mean, obviously, there's some tweaks that need to still be made.
Oh, yeah. But to make clear, of course, the only reason we were able to play him now is because they went ahead and made him available early for people to play for free. So you don't have to buy a battle pass. You don't have to go buy a character or anything in the store. He's free through this weekend. So this weekend, of course, it's the 3rd. So that means, of course, today, the 4th and the 5th. So by the time this comes up, this episode comes up on any of the podcast platforms, he'll still be available. Needless to say, though, of course, he's going to hop into Season 8 of Overwatch 2. so not too far away. But we also got a tease of two new heroes. And I'm very curious about the second one here more specifically. So we've got Venture, who is a DPS character. And Venture's design, if you haven't seen them yet, is what appears to be some sort of mix of like a mountaineer slash like miner of some type, because they have what appears to be like a pickaxe or something like on their back. Like, it's not a big one, it's a small one that you'd actually see like mountain climbers use. But then the weapon they have looks like Zarya's weapon, but with like a drill attachment on the front of it.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know, it's almost like a combination between a drill, an excavator, and I don't know, I was thinking of some other thing, but yeah, it looks really bizarre.
Yeah, I was staring at the artwork there that they had shared of Venture, and as I was trying to look at that, I was trying to do the same thing. Like, I was trying to discern like what exactly is the weapon going to do, or at least what are the abilities going to do? Because sometimes you see that tied into the actual like overall like costume or skin of the character itself. You can usually pick out to a point like what they're going to be able to do. But yeah, it's kind of tough to say what that weapon's going to be like. And I'm hoping that if they are DPS, they're not too terribly slow to move around.
Right.
But in the meantime, of course, we got another hero shown off. However, they made clear they don't have an official name yet. But this hero is codenamed internally Space Ranger. And what fascinates me about this character is going to be a support one. I'm getting vibes almost that she may end up being someone to do with D.Va in some way. Like, she almost has the exact same style of mecha suit. And mecha, not necessarily like the actual mecha that D.Va pilots, but the actual pilot suit, I guess, is the better way to say it. Very similar to what D.Va has, except, of course, the helmet, what appears to be some type of like jetpack type attachment of sorts, and then some sort of like boots or shoes or whatever that have jets on them. Like, you can actually see the nozzles kind of on the back.
Well, and who's to say it's not? I mean, D.Va was supposedly part of some sort of like mech division that the rest of her comrades got destroyed. Maybe one of them didn't necessarily get destroyed, or she went, other pilot went rogue. It's hard to say, especially since there's so little out except for just an image. But
yeah,
it'll be interesting to find out, especially since next year they announced that there's going to be three new heroes hitting Overwatch.
Yeah, I mean, seriously, you got Malga, you got Venture, and then whatever Space Ranger's name is going to actually be.
Well, and technically, Malga will be this year. So there's one unannounced hero, if that's the way
That's right.
They're playing it. So
yeah, that is right. Yeah, so we don't actually have very long then, you know. But I can't remember exactly what it was like in the rotation for hero. It may be another support hero then after, if memory serves me right on the way that rotation goes. But needless to say, I don't care. It's still cool to see that they're figuring out ways to continue to build up the roster. And we're getting like a roster sheet that's very similar in complexity and style to like League of Legends almost.
Yeah.
You know,
good news and bad news out of the Overwatch announcements though. Hanamura is coming back. Yay. In a sense.
No.
So they're actually launching a new map mode called Clash, where it will be 5 points on a map that you have to fight to control over, and it'll be either score or point-based. So if you control all the points, then you win, or it'll be based off of the score at the end of the round.
And obviously, if you control more points, you're going to get a higher score.
Right, right. And then the, I guess the first new Clash map, that will be available won't be Hanamura, but however will be located near Hanamura. But the map will be called Hanaoka.
Yep.
So,
well, it's good to see it.
I still want Hanamura back. That was like one of my favorite maps. I really wish they'd just bring that back.
Oh, yeah, same here. I was a little bummed when they were showing the imagery of Hanamura there up on the stage, too, and you could even hear the crowd going crazy. It was like, oh, awesome, and then it's like,
well,
what?
Yeah, and I know you missed the text because I was blowing up your phone, but I immediately saw it, and I was like, oh, my God, they're bringing back Hanamura, and then I was like, oh, it's Hanaoka. Well,
that's okay.
Shit.
I wonder if it'll be. I wonder if it'll be something similar to the, like it'll be something that's near Hanamura where you can actually see like the buildings and details that you would see when you're actually playing on the original Hanamura map, and maybe that means we'll actually see Hanamura come back very soon, which I'd be all for. You know, I mean, it's very possible that they could do something there with it, especially like if you think for the one of the Omnic story missions there in King's Row that they had opened up that entire other area you had never been able to get to. They actually had built it out. I wonder if you could run into something similar there, and maybe this is just an extension of Hanamura.
Well, and now that they've done the different, you know, the dawn, dusk, and, you know, daytime modes for each of the level, it would be kind of cool to see some place like Hanamura in, like, you know, just not cherry blossom season, but in like winter or in the midst of summer, as well as maybe even different times of day. I think Hanamura, or, you know, even Hanaoka as it would be in the new map, would be really cool to see at dusk.
Oh, I think so too.
Yeah. But beyond that, they did have some other announcements for... and I just lost the article. Dang it. Oh, there it is.
Yeah, let's talk about that next bit there, because they moved on from Overwatch 2 to Diablo 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, and of course...
And...
That was fun.
Oh, go ahead.
No, you're
yeah.
Go ahead, man. Talk about it. Let's hear it.
No. So, oh God, my browser is like wigging out on me.
That's okay.
this website wants me to have cookies, and I don't know. This is crazy. Diablo 4. Of course, they did announce the new season. And something that made players extremely happy about the new season is the leveling has been tailored so that you'll be able to level up 40% faster, which I know in the previous season, it was a grind to even attempt to try and hit level 100. So hopefully not so much now. Another big announcement is there will be a new class added next year. There was no announcement of what the class will be, if I remember, or did I just turn away for that?
No, they have basically said there's a new one coming, but it was stay tuned. They're basically trying to keep they're trying to keep the excitement in place.
And the best part was it's a class that's never been in a Diablo game before. So obviously not a necromancer, not a magician or a barbarian. We're seeing something entirely new. I don't even know what to speculate on the class, in all honesty.
Same way. I was trying to sit there figuring out, it's like, what could they actually do? And then as soon as they announce it, it'll probably be like, oh, okay, that makes sense.
Yeah, because, I mean, even going back to number 3, Demon Hunter and Monk, those should have been no-brainers for, like, even the first Diablo, but they weren't there. And I'm drawing a blank because I've played very little Diablo 2 of what the classes were in that one. But I don't know. It's hard to even speculate what could it could possibly be. I don't know. It's exciting. But with that, they also did announce a expansion that would be coming out for Diablo 4 that takes the game to a whole new area.
Yeah, I noticed that. It's this next expansion is going to be called, or the first actual expansion of this is called the Vessel of Hatred. And that's going to be coming out at the end of this next year. And apparently it's going to have a new region. They did give a name to it, but the name is not actually here in the article we're referencing. But they did also confirm that there is going to be another region added in that same DLC from Diablo 2, apparently. So a lot of revisiting that I'm sure that fans are going to be dying for, you know.
And, of course, you know, they do have the holiday event coming up that will be titled the Abattoir of Zir, dubbed Midwinter Blight, that will start on December 12th. And there's speculation that it may include a killer evil Santa Claus.
Which, yeah, they did say there
would
be
Salad Claus.
Yeah, they did say that there would be someone running around, like some bastion of evil in a red cloak. And of course, the big takeaway is that it is probably Santa.
Or maybe it's Superman.
It
Who
could
knows?
Also be Superman, although that's weird, but.
Yeah. I mean, it's Diablo, whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I need to pick up the new one still. It now that it's been out for a while and some of the bugs and hitches that have gotten worked out of it, I'm more excited to play it. But then again, with Diablo, you wait like 2 years and then they come out with the ultimate edition that they sell for like 10 years. So it's hard to pick it up and justify it.
Yeah.
But yeah, carrying on.
Yeah. So, the next big one, of course, was talking about Hearthstone stuff. So a lot of the things here that really focused on Hearthstone is that there's, apparently it has not been abandoned as some people had thought it probably was going to be. It's still actually getting supported, and they have gone ahead and showed that there's going to be a new expansion being added called Showdown in the Badlands, and it seems to have some sort of Wild West theme to it. And that'll launch here in a couple weeks on the 14th. But they also had announced what they call as catch-up packs. Not like ketchup, not your red sauce for your french fries, your hamburgers, no. Catch-up, C-A-T-C-H-U-P. These packs are going to have 50 cards from the different expansion sets over the last couple years, and all players will be getting some of those packs. Like they'll be giving away, I think, like one or two packs there right away. So it's kind of to help bolster your decks for things that you may have missed over the years. But if you are one of those who is one of those, like, I guess, paid subscribers to Hearthstone, I don't know. I couldn't really understand that. I didn't think there was anything that was like a paid subscription to it or something. But it sounds like you'll actually get quite a few more of those packs available to you when things kick off. So that's pretty cool. And then, yeah, I guess they're going to also be adding a co-op mode called Battlegrounds Duos, which means that, you know, like Kyle, if you and I wanted to play Hearthstone against two other people, we could actually do that in the game, share a health pool and trade cards back and forth during battles. So if I got something in my hand that makes sense with something in your hand that makes sense, you know, we could bring those together in one hand, play them at the same time, you know, as stuff goes there. So that isn't going to drop until early 2024. But then on Warcraft news, though, I downloaded this game to my phone, Kyle. I have yet to start playing it. Warcraft Rumble.
I actually did. Yeah. I got an announcement. I had pre-registered for it and got an announcement yesterday that it was available for download, and totally spaced that I had activated the download to pre-download it or whatever yesterday or day beforehand, I want to say, or maybe it was Tuesday. Regardless, I saw the announcement and I was like, oh yeah, and I started playing and I was like watching the trailer while playing. The game is a ton of fun. I remember I've spoken about it a few times to you and probably live. It was a mobile game that they got closed down like 2 or 3 years ago called Gears Pop.
Mm-hmm.
And the way the summoning pool worked is it was like a timer-based thing where it would, over so many seconds, you would generate units. And certain units that you had would take that summoning unit to summon. Well, it kind of plays the same on a predetermined battlefield that almost looks like a miniature version of something out of League of Legends or something. Mm-hmm. But it all your characters, they operate on their own. They do their own thing. You just summon them and let them go. And it's a ton of fun. And there's a story to it. There's PvP mode. You get to build up your own character collection and swap out character figurines eventually. I haven't made it to that point yet, but it's really cool. And if you haven't tried it, definitely do it. And since you haven't, I advise it almost immediately after doing this.
Yeah, and I've got it on my phone. I installed it. I had to run a couple errands this afternoon, and I've got it installed. I just have yet to actually boot it up and start playing. But
oh, yeah. It's fun.
I will definitely work on it. Trust me. I will give it a try. But the next big things, of course, though, were about good old Warcraft just in general. Not Rumble, but Warcraft. I guess more specifically, World of Warcraft. So they did talk about World of Warcraft Classic. Classic, of course, being basically the relaunch of the old base game and the expansions that go along with it. And they've announced that the next expansion is just following suit with everything else, and that is Cataclysm. So Cataclysm Classic is going to be joining the roster, and it's going to be coming back, or it's going to be showing up in the first half of this next year. So Cataclysm, of all things, and this is a shock to me, originally came out in 2010. And yeah, it's just weird to think that expansion is already 13 years old. But the bigger things, of course, that go along with the addition of Cataclysm is that it's going to have faster cadence, improved leveling, improved guild features. They're going to add the Worgen and Goblins, and then there's going to be 10 dungeons and 5 raids. So really, it's going to feel like, you know, kind of jumping back into the mix of things when Cataclysm first dropped. And what they did is, instead of being more of a reworked cinematic trailer or anything else, they just re-showed the same one that's bundled in with the original Cataclysm. So they just put that up on the screen. That was pretty cool to see. Lastly, of course, though, they did get into more details about just World of Warcraft in general. What they've gone ahead and said is that it's going to be getting a major story update, and they have gone ahead and announced what they're calling the World Soul Saga, Kyle. It's going to take place over 3 expansions, but they announced the names of all 3 expansions, which is kind of a surprise that they're doing this type of thing so far ahead for all these games here. That they announced all these details here. So the first expansion is called The War Within, and it's going to deal with exploring a subterranean kingdom. Then there's going to be the next one after that called Midnight, which will take players back to, I can't remember if I'm pronouncing this right, Quel'Thalas, which I think is where the orcs are actually from. And then finally, there's the last Titan, which is going to be set in Northrend. So there are quite a few trailers and other things that have been showing off right now, too. And it's just it's tough to really describe without people going and watching it. So the fact, though, that we're basically at like the 20-ish year point since World of Warcraft released, which that's a hell of a surprise to think about, 20 years of WoW. There's just a lot to take in. So if you like, for anybody there who hasn't had a chance to watch those cinematics, go do it. It's a lot to kind of take in and start to kind of figure out. So
Yeah, no, and there's a lot of cinematics. They're really well done. And there's a lot of story. It's no wonder they were able to make a movie off of it, in all honesty.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, there are sometimes I'll actually go back and watch the cinematics in like movie form on YouTube, just to kind of enjoy the art and stuff too. It kind of helped me get caught up for Diablo stuff as well when we started playing Diablo 3 last year. So yeah, it's always so good. So to see cinematics from I know Blizzard always like generally contracts out the cinematics to be done, but they're always just so good.
Oh yeah, no, and just that even the like the new one, especially the way that the human guy looked, some of the way his skin looked, the way the sweat just dripped off his skin, it looked realistic. It was just phenomenal, and it's captivating. Even though I'm not, you know, a Warcraft player, it's Blizzard's always just had captivating cinematics.
Oh yeah, they always have. So looking at the schedule here, of course, they've kind of gone through a lot of the stuff already now. So the next day, of course, for the 4th here, which is tomorrow or the day of the release of this podcast, they're going back into World of Warcraft stuff again, talking Overwatch 2. They're going to be doing what they call here a Diablo 4 campfire chat, community night. Of course, I don't know exactly what that's going to deal with. And then, of course, the cross collaboration between Overwatch and Le Sserafim is going to culminate in a live appearance and live performance at the Anaheim Convention Center at BlizzCon. So yeah, if you want to check that out, 6:15 p.m. Pacific time, November 4th. But needless to say, that is it on the good news side of things when it comes to Activision Blizzard. Do you want to hear some bad news then on the other side of Activision Blizzard?
Oh, dear.
Or specifically the other side of the house. So, of course, we talked all the good news about Blizzard. Let's talk about some bad news with Activision. Yeah, well, I think a lot of people already saw this coming. Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3 has had reviews out now, a couple of them, and based on those reviews and player sentiment right now, things are not shaping up to look very good for this game. A lot of the complaints right now so far have been the quality of the campaign, which a lot of people are saying that it can take about 4 hours to beat, which is the shortest amount of time for any Modern Warfare campaign. I think any Call of Duty campaign at 4 hours, and that's pretty pretty crazy to think about. But at the same time, a lot of the concern is that even with the shortness of the campaign, it seems like a lot of the things that were in the campaign itself were just more of multiplayer elements that were dropped in and turned into single player elements. Some players actually noticed that it felt like they were playing things like DMZ, at least like with this open combat stuff. There were some people who felt like it was kind of like a weird cross with like Warzone as well. It just didn't feel like things went together right. And then, of course, with the game going into early access for the campaign yesterday, which would have been the 2nd of November, people were noticing a couple different things. One is that on the PlayStation, there were no dedicated trophies for Modern Warfare 3 or a platinum trophy. They were all bundled underneath the Modern Warfare 2 trophy collection. You had some players on PlayStation as well reporting that Modern Warfare 3 would not load up unless you had the Modern Warfare 2 disc in your console. And then what was the other one there too? There was another one I saw. I can't remember what the other one was. I think that was actually probably it. But yeah, there's a lot of people reporting here, and it seems like it kind of all falls into the rumor mill talking about Modern Warfare 3 stuff actually being more of just an expansion of Modern Warfare 2. And I think that's kind of a disappointment for things here. Because, yeah, IGN gave it a score of 4 out of 10, saying underbaked, rehashed, and cobbled together from multiplayer parts, Modern Warfare 3 single-player campaign is everything a Call of Duty story mode shouldn't be. And then GamePro went on and said, unfortunately, the two big innovations, in quotes, Makarov and the open combat missions, didn't work for me at all. On the contrary, the latter, with the generic gameplay feel, even becoming the biggest weakness of Modern Warfare 3, because, to put it bluntly, I'm just running over disguised Warzone maps and shooting stupid AI minions overboard.
But I've been trying to say this for a while, and I know you've heard it from me for a long time. I feel like this is where Call of Duty's been on the road to, especially with, you know, how Warzone and multiplayer has been supported and some of the glitches that we've seen occur time and time again, with hot fixes that they'll work for two or three patches that all of a sudden break again mm-hmm. in the same manner. And the fact that, you know, they can't even get a stable multiplayer, starting clear back from, I want to say, at least Modern Warfare. Because really and truly, what is Warzone 2.0 but an expansion or an extension of Warzone, the first one? And what was Warzone but just an extension of multiplayer from Modern Warfare? So really, are we just playing the same rehashed game over and over, that, you know, they ran out of ideas and that's why we're getting what we're getting now? And it's so cobbled together and poorly done that it is literally the multiplayer experience. You've already played it because you're experiencing those you've experienced those glitches for the past 2-3 years now.
Yeah, and I mean, even in tandem with it too is, I mean, Modern Warfare, like Call of Duty games, have been innovative in some ways, you know, for a while now. Of course, mm-hmm. obviously with Battle Royale stuff, like with Warzone, it's a lot of copy paste because other games have been doing it. But there have been a few things here and there. Needless to say, yeah, it's kind of hit its stride, or it's hit its peak already, and it's starting to fall down into that valley where it's just not going to do as well. And the fact that for you to get anything, you're basically going to be paying $70 for all of this. I mean, sure, if you're a fan of the multiplayer stuff when it comes to like the new zombies missions, the regular multiplayer, or I guess whatever bonuses you might get going into Warzone, okay, you know, whatever. But at the same time, it's a $70 game for a campaign that lasts only 4 hours. And at the same time, one of the bigger complaints that people have been making as well, too, is that the install size is around 215 gigs.
Yeah.
215 gigs for a game like this?
Well, and you figure there's a lot of people that they get a base gaming laptop. It's got a 250 gig SSD in it. Like, the 90% of the rest of the portion after you've installed Call of Duty is OS and formatting. You can't put, literally, you cannot put anything else on that laptop, on that computer, if it's got just a 250 gig SSD on it.
Yeah, and that even takes up like a third to a quarter of my storage space on my Xbox Series X.
Yeah, and you're getting a four-hour campaign experience that's unsatisfactory and broken. That doesn't even make sense. Like, for the Modern Warfare 2, I told you I never got to actually finish the campaign because multiplayer updates broke the campaign for me. I didn't even have to uninstall the file because, well, I did have to uninstall the file because it became unplayable from the updates.
And that's a shame, especially. But, I mean, most of the people aren't getting this game for the campaign, though, either. They're getting it for the multiplayer. They're getting it for the Warzone. They're getting it for DMC.
That's another funny thing. Then why isn't it a free game? Because they're forcing people to pay, you know, $20 to $50 every 2 to 3 months for a battle pass, that the rewards aren't all that good, or they'll have one reward that breaks the game because it's a pay-to-win reward where, you know, it's a blackout skin or this or that. It affects the hitboxes or something. And it's happened on multiple iterations of the game, multiple iterations of Warzone now, that they still haven't learned their lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I just wonder almost if it's worth it instead just to go and pay the $40 to rebuy Modern Warfare 3 on Steam and just play through that instead. You know, I mean, the original Modern Warfare games, like Call of Duty 4 Modern Warfare, Call of Duty Modern Warfare 2, and Call of Duty Modern Warfare 3, those were all fantastic games. They were by far some of my favorite games, and they were very well done. I mean, there are so many people who still play these games right now, too, that you're not going to find, like, or you're not going to have a shortage of people to play with. Sure, it's not going to have some of these things that the existing games have now, the newer games have now. But the other thing with it, though, is that the cost is much lower, and you're going to have a better quality campaign. I mean, this game was made, again, 2011. You're talking, oh, what is that now? That's 12 years ago. And why, like, whatever happened in these last 12 years to cause them to think that story didn't matter? Well, tell you the truth, it really does. Especially with something like
Battle Pass has happened.
Yeah.
The fact that they found out that they could eke more money out of you every 3 months by putting in pittance of content over multiplayer stuff, it's just ridiculous. If you're gonna make a multiplayer focused game that your campaign's gonna be broken and short, you should actually tailor the cost of the game to what you're putting out. Not just make us pay full price, which is, you know, $70 for a title now, for a broken campaign and a poor multiplayer experience.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's where it's kind of frustrating for me. So I don't know what else to say on this right now. I mean, the reviews kind of speak for themselves.
It's very frustrating, though.
Yeah, I mean, the reintroduction of Makarov does sound pretty cool, but at the same time, I just really wish, I don't know, that
things is it that bit, cool though?
I don't
is know. Is it cool enough that you're willing to risk I don't know. I don't want to say the stability of the game, but the integrity of the game just to bring back one character. I don't know if it's worth it.
Yeah, I'm good.
They should have just left it alone at this point.
Yeah, I'll stick with picking up like Modern Warfare 3, the original, on Steam, you know, instead and play that.
I agree.
Yeah. Well, let's move on to some of this other news here. And again, the news doesn't get any better here, you know, after the BlizzCon stuff. I mean, it's more chaos here. But let's talk about this one here, because this one's definitely been big news this week, is Destiny 2. So Bungie has gone ahead and laid off around 100 team members and has gone ahead and delayed both Marathon and the upcoming expansion for Destiny 2 known as the Final Shape. So the Final Shape won't be dropping until June of next year, and Marathon is another year and a half out, so around 2025. And this is a bit of a surprise, I guess, to actually see kind of like what's going on here. Based on the information that's come out here, it looks like this wasn't driven by Sony. There was no effort by Sony to say, hey, you need to let all these guys go. It sounds like there was a lot of poor bets that were made at the leadership level, but leadership at Bungie, none of them were let go. None of them left or took a hit or anything like that. So they're all still there. And at the same time, it sounds like a lot of the waning support for Destiny 2 is what led to some of this even happening right now. I mean, player sentiments has been low for a while. Granted, there are still a lot of people who play it, but it's been low enough there that it seems like feedback's not being paid attention to. And so there's still a lot of uncertainty and chaos here. However, there are a lot of people behind those who got let go, a lot of gamers. And I shared this story with you yesterday, is that Destiny 2 fans have actually been going and making a request for refunds for their pre-order for Final Shape, basically trying to make it hurt where, you know, or hit them where they hurt. And yeah, it's apparently been working. So
Has it though? Because really they are hurting the people that are still there.
I know. That's the thing, is that it's like I think there's that understanding. It was the same way with stuff with like Blizzard after all of the accusations and stuff had come out a couple of years ago, that it feels like it's about the same thing, is that it's like the only way you seem like you can elicit change is by actually like doing something like this. And for a corporation, especially like and group like Bungie, obviously you got to hit them where it hurts in some way, and you obviously don't want to do it where you're really causing problems for the devs, but sometimes that's how you do it. I mean, that's just one of those ways to do it.
But that's not even to mention the other point with Marathon. The fact that they put it out in front of a test audience and it got a meh response, and now the game might actually be going under a complete overhaul to be a extraction shooter like Tarkov.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. That almost speaks like confusion within the company to me.
Yeah, it seems like confusion. I mean, there have been things said, of course, though, too, like by the by leadership and that as well after all of this. I'm going to see if I can actually find one of those stories here, because I didn't get a chance to actually read what they had said. Let's see. Where is that article? Let's see.
But I think this kind of goes back to, you know, we had talked about the Bungie purchase by Sony back when it had happened, a year ago? And the fact that Sony was going to have to actually support Bungie if you know, they went through with the purchase. I mean, Bungie, if I'm not mistaken, has had to fall back from support from other companies before in development, such as Microsoft when developing Halo. They tend to go over budget and overthink things. But also, there's the fact that Sony is notorious for developing something or buying something and then doing nothing with it. I mean, you look at what they did with this kind of is a wave callback, and maybe it is what, you know, what led up into the Sony's internet platform. But if I'm not mistaken, Sony was the company that bought the Sega Dreamcast's internet service.
I think so.
Yeah, they bought their whole online platform and their workings for it. And they just sat on it for a long time. But they've also, you know, put out two handhelds, and they didn't do anything for them. So I don't know. Sony is a very confusing company to me.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like it's a Sony problem though here, because this
no, but I think Sony could step in and help.
Potentially. I mean, they brought them on and they said they were going to go ahead and keep them as an independent studio instead of being something that did like first party games for them and that. And it's like this article here from Forbes even makes a comment saying internally, really no one is blaming Sony for this, even management. Some employees were told that if the Sony buyout did not happen, that with current Destiny 2 performance, the studio itself would have been in jeopardy if they were still independent. So, yeah, it seems like there's kind of a mix here of like what's going on. This is what the comment I just made earlier though, is that like, here's what this Forbes article says. It says employees are extremely angry with leadership now and have often communicated that publicly in meetings. Bets were made that did not pay off, but those who made them remained in the company, a fact lost on no one. So yeah, we've got kind of a weird mix of things that are going on there at the home of Destiny here. But
yeah,
you know, I mean, there have been massive layoffs in the gaming industry anyway over the last year. I mean, it's been almost nonstop, and obviously, of course, there's not going to be layoffs in companies, of course, as markets change and things happen. But I don't know. It just feels like there could have probably been more done at the management level to really try to keep things nice and secure here, so that way these guys weren't out of a job. But the only way to really express that disdain and distrust of Bungie is, you know, hit them in the wallet. And that's what players are doing right now to show solidarity in some form, even if it potentially means hurting the other devs there. But I mean, once you start seeing those dollars fade away, it's, you know,
and maybe it's something that needs to happen, I guess, at that point. So,
and that might be one of those things when Sony does step in, like they might see like what the actual backlash is here on this. And Sony steps in and is like, well, you got some changes to make and you better do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Let's move on here to our last main story. We can wrap up the news here for this week. I know we got a couple quest markers there too. But this is an interesting one. And you know what? I do kind of agree with this though. Sakurai, Masahiro Sakurai, he's the director of the Smash Brothers franchise, put out a video on his YouTube channel talking about Smash Brothers Ultimate and talking about what the future of Smash Brothers actually looks like. What he goes on to say here in his video, of course, what he was really talking about is he was talking about first and foremost, basically what it took to make Ultimate work for both people who had played Smash over all the years and people who had never played Smash at all. And then of course the, challenges with the pandemic and trying to develop and add characters and support things, as well of course as well as like with storage media problems, because the Switch cartridge can only hold 16 gigabytes, whereas the Wii U disc could hold 25 gigabytes. So obviously taking a step back on what could be potentially supported, but not so much. I mean, we got quite a bit in Smash Brothers Ultimate. But what he decided to do though at the end of his video was talk a little bit about where the series was kind of potentially going to go. And what he said here is, as for what comes next for the Smash Brothers series, even I'm not sure. I feel we truly succeeded in making people happy with this game. But now that Smash Bros. Has grown to be monstrous in size, I'd say it's difficult to imagine an increase of this magnitude happening again. Every time we manage to make a game that I had previously thought impossible, so I can't say for certain there won't be another, but I do think it'd be difficult to push it any further than we have. It's an interesting thought, but I do technically agree with it, because Smash Brothers Ultimate is so massive. Not necessarily with the way the story stuff works out, with the way the characters have been added and tweaked and modified, with all of the amiibo support out there as well, too. Like, I don't know what else could change about Smash Brothers, or at least, like, what the future of it looks like beyond Ultimate, because there's already so much going on in here. It's like, what could be next? I mean, we're not going to see a Smash Brothers Battle Royale, at least in the sense of, like, you know, Warzone or anything like
that.
I don't know what it'd be.
Yeah, right at this point, you know, and I've heard rumors of like a Smash reboot where they would pare down the number of characters, and I don't think that would be a very good thing. I think you would have a lot of upset fans because of the number of characters that were available and the amount of gameplay that was to be had in Super Smash Ultimate. That being said, I think a Smash game could potentially work again, but not for a very, very long time, just because of how successful and how long Ultimate ran and how many characters have been added for that matter. I mean, there were some characters that, you know, people threw out there that they would have liked to see, and, you know, maybe there were too many swordsmen and too many Fire Emblem and Dragon Quest characters that got added, but it, you know, it is what it is, and we got the game that we got. And for I think another one to exist, there would have to be other developers to put out fighting games of a conglomerate of their characters to maybe pull from. To make a new version of a Smash game work. I think there would also have to be more communication and camaraderie between the big three in order for a more successful, inclusive Smash to work. But that being said, because it would be a Nintendo title, I don't think it would happen for a very long time. And that the next best thing that we're going to get is maybe some sort of new iteration of a Smash Ultimate in the far distant future that has different or more, or, you know, just a better, bigger roster of characters. Who knows? I mean, instead of having, you know, almost what, 2/3 of 100, there are so many characters on there. I don't even know how many are on 89. There anymore. Holy crap.
Yeah, 89.
So almost 100 characters. Yeah. So, I mean, we could get well over 100 characters in a new version. But I think at this point, we need to give it, like, at least 6 years.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a period in time here, I think, where they're going to have that discussion on what exactly can happen next. So I think whatever is going to happen next with Smash, at least, is probably going to be that, as a revamp of the existing Ultimate to be maybe another step up on whatever the next hardware is from Nintendo. Like there's going to have to, there will end up being some sort of mass improvements there or what have you that they can introduce. Because, you know, like you look at like other fighter games like Tekken or Street Fighter,
Marvel versus Capcom. That's the one that comes to mind, because you think like Marvel versus Capcom, great fighter. Marvel versus Capcom 2, extremely good fighter, excellent fighter, huge roster. Marvel versus Capcom 3, they pared down the roster, still great game, but then they went to Ultimate and it sucked.
Yep.
Like everything about it sucked. So this is a point where they have to tread carefully.
Yeah, and that's why I think it's just taking the existing Ultimate and just giving it that spit shine, and then whatever under the hood tweaks would need to be made for whatever the new hardware is going to be. I think that's really what we're going to be seeing next. And then, of course, those Amiibos people won't stop collecting, so they're just going to re-release the Amiibos again, too.
Who knows? Re-release the story mode, but release a whole new story mode. You could re-release the same game with two stories, and it would still work.
That's fair. Yeah, that's always a possibility.
And I loved the story mode on Super Smash Ultimate. Honestly, it was a lot of fun. I think I had more fun on story mode than I had playing multiplayer matches.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's huh. I guess that's this week's news in a nutshell, at least on the main story part. You want to go ahead and wrap us up, Kyle, with those quest markers we got for this week?
I suppose. So, for our first quest marker for this evening, Fortnite OG has brought in nearly 4 million players in the first day. So, of course, millions have flocked back to Fortnite as it has reverted back to Season 1, Chapter 1. So, the OG Fortnite is back with all the original shopping carts, ATKs, whatever those are, assault rifles, pump shotguns, and more. And it has both Battle Royale and Zero Build, which, of course, that's the one that I love.
Same here.
And, of course, you got all your original areas, Tilted Towers, Risky Reels, Greasy Groves, and Loot Lake, which mean absolutely nothing to me. But who knows, maybe it'll give me a reason to hop back into Fortnite since I got into the game kind of late. And yeah, I don't know, it was fun. I still am more than anything curious about the original mode that it launched with, where it was like a tower defense type thing. But I think it might be cool and worthwhile checking out Season 1, and apparently fans do too. Being as it's had an influx of players.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
But that's pretty much it for that quest marker. In our second quest marker for this evening, Microsoft's set to cut free Xbox Game Pass benefits from employees until Phil Spencer steps in. I had known a little bit about this. I unfortunately did not read the article before getting in this week, but Microsoft was planning to remove a free Xbox Game Pass Ultimate benefits for most of its 238,000 employees in January, but the company is now reversing its decision following the employees' complaints. This is per The Verge report. As of, this says yesterday, but I think this was actually yesterday that it was written.
The Phil Spencer update came in today.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, here it is. Spencer has now confirmed that the decision will be reversed and that Microsoft employees will keep the Xbox Game Pass Ultimate benefit. And Xbox, or Phil Spencer's message reads as, quote, "After looking into this more with our team, I just wanted to confirm that no change will be made to Game Pass availability in 2024. If you have access to Game Pass, to the Game Pass offer today, you will continue to have access. I appreciate the time to get up to speed, and sorry for the questions and confusion created. And thanks for supporting Xbox." Of course, the reversal means that Microsoft employees will continue to have their Xbox Ultimate Game Pass. Some of these employees have actually had the Ultimate Game Pass subscription since 2019 provided to them by Microsoft.
Yeah, and it even goes farther back with that, because they would get Xbox Live Gold for free too as a part of their employee benefits.
Right. The Game Pass Ultimate started when some employees got in on the beta, essentially, and then when it first launched. But, of course, unfortunately, it isn't clear why Microsoft heads, aside from the CEOs and Phil Spencer, tried to make this decision. It's unfortunate, but it's good that Microsoft finally pulled their head out and Phil Spencer said, no, all of our employees get the Game Pass. So, good for them. And with that little bit of news, that is it for the quest markers for this week.
And because that's it for the quest markers, that is it for the NPC's weekly news roundup for the week of November 3rd, 2023. So thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in to the weekly news roundup. Of course, if you like what you're listening to, be sure to go to subscribe to us on your favorite podcast platform of choice. We are on Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, you name it, we're on it. Go subscribe. But if you're not sure exactly where else to find us at, maybe I didn't name your favorite platform, go check us out on our homepage, anchor.fm/the-npcs-podcast, where you can find all of our old episodes and find all the other platforms we are supported on. With that, thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in. We will catch you all next week.
Laters.